Welcome to Journal Club for January 5th, 2024. I'm Malcolm Diggs. It's just a normal day at the office. You're surfing the web, you're sending emails and messages, you're composing spreadsheets and documents, you're writing code. It's just like any other day, until it's not. A window pops up on your screen. At first, you think it's an advertisement, but it's not. It's so much worse than that. The message informs you that all your important files have been encrypted. Opening them is useless. Moving them to another machine is useless. The original files, all your hard work, is, for all intents and purposes, gone. All that's left behind is ciphertext. But the message continues. All you need to do is transfer a certain amount of crypto to a specific wallet address before the deadline on the screen. If you do that, it promises that all your files will be restored. Does this scene sound far-fetched? Does it sound like a Hollywood movie? It's not. This is the reality of a ransomware attack. This is crypto ransomware, to be exact. It happens way more often than you might think. It's estimated that ransomware affects roughly two-thirds of mid-size and large companies every single year. Generally, ransomware, or any other type of malware, infiltrates systems via phishing emails, malicious links, or by exploiting vulnerabilities in software that the employees are using. One way or another, the ransomware ends up on the target's computer and starts to wreak havoc. There are two different levels of infection: user space and root. Most ransomware is user space, and if you get that kind of infection, consider yourself lucky, because the alternative is much worse. User space ransomware works within the permissions granted to standard user accounts. This means it cannot modify system-level configurations or access kernel data. This also means, critically, that if you have backups or restore points in protected areas that require administrator privileges, those are also safe. What the ransomware can do is encrypt most user files, as these are typically within the permissions of a standard account. Root privilege ransomware, on the other hand, is significantly harder to detect and mitigate. Root-level ransomware can disable security tools, encrypt backups, and render entire systems inoperable. Today, we're looking at a paper that presents a new mitigation option for user space ransomware only. It won't really apply to anything operating with root privileges. When your computer becomes infected with user space ransomware, you generally have three mitigation options. 1. Pay the ransom and hope for the best. 2. Try to reverse engineer the malware and find the decryption keys. And 3. Wipe the machine and restore from a backup. It isn't always possible to do options 1 or 2. The ransom may be too high for option 1. The ransomware might be too sophisticated to reverse engineer, or it might not store the decryption keys on the machine at all. For these and other reasons, a number of organizations have begun to default to number 3, wiping and restoring. We all have an intuitive understanding of what those words mean, but it's worth our time to actually look at the internal mechanisms at play here, because they'll be important later. Everything I'm about to say, in fact, everything about this paper, assumes your system has a flash drive, not an old-school spinning disk. The flash translation layer, FTL, is an abstraction layer inside of flash memory storage devices that bridges the gap between traditional block-based file systems like FAT32 or NTFS and the unique physical properties of flash memory. The wiping process targets the physical memory blocks that are managed by the FTL. When initiated, the wipe operation systematically invalidates all the logical to physical address mappings in the FTL's translation table, effectively rendering all previously written data inaccessible. After that, the storage controller executes a series of block erase commands, which reset the memory cells in each block to their default state. With the wipe complete, the restoration process begins by constructing the storage system's foundational architecture, starting with the file system structure. This structure, comprising metadata like directory trees, inode tables, or master file tables, defines how data is logically organized and accessed. Restoration involves sequentially reinitializing these metadata structures, ensuring that they map correctly to the storage medium. As subsequent data is restored, the FTL employs its out-of-place update mechanism, where new writes are directed to fresh physical locations rather than overwriting existing ones. This method not only preserves the integrity of previously stored data, but also mitigates wear on the memory cells by distributing write operations evenly. Once all data is reinstalled, the system performs an integrity check, comparing the restored files against their backup counterparts using cryptographic hashes or checksums stored during the initial backup process. This validation step confirms that the restoration is both accurate and complete. But that's not all. Throughout the operation, error correction codes are employed to detect and resolve bit errors. And there are also a number of other security and validation mechanisms that we just don't have time to go into. The point is, this approach is extremely thorough and highly effective. And I'd say this is exactly the process you want 99% of the time. But there are cases, rare but they do exist, when this is not what you want. The wipe and restore process takes time. It's computationally intensive, and it's all or nothing. So your machine will be out of commission for however long that process takes. You can imagine a situation where you've suffered a ransomware attack, there is some mission-critical file that you need to get access to immediately, and you can't afford to wait for the whole system to be wiped and restored. That's where this paper comes in. The off-the-shelf mechanisms for performing the restore aren't capable of restoring single files at a time. The mapping mechanisms of the FTL are designed for efficient storage operations. They are not designed to preserve data in a way that enables selective recovery of specific files. So when you go to restore, you're given the option of restoring it all or restoring none of it. What the authors are inventing here is a workaround for that. The author system is called FF Recovery. It combines file system forensics at the upper storage layer with raw data extraction from the FTL. This cross-layer approach enables fine-grained, per-file recovery while preserving critical metadata and ensuring the consistency of recovered files. Here's how it does that, step by step. 1. When the system is in a clean or healthy state, an external ransomware detector is installed. Then, FF Recovery is installed. The latter installation process establishes a cryptographic communication channel between the ransomware detector and the FTL. This channel uses a shared secret to validate detection results and prevent unauthorized manipulation of the FTL. 2. At some point in the future, ransomware is detected, and the detector communicates this to the FTL. This initiates either a freeze or a time delay on garbage collection. That ensures that no essential data is lost during recovery. 3. A systems forensic module restores the metadata for compromised files, enabling identification of their corresponding disk locations. When ransomware encrypts a file but does not delete it, the module locates this metadata using standard traversal methods. When ransomware deletes the original file and replaces it with new data, the module uses a deeper form of analysis, including retrieving a copy of the metadata from the journaling logs. 4. After determining the logical locations of the original file data, FF Recovery extracts the corresponding raw data directly from the flash memory. Due to the out-of-place updates managed by the FTL, the original data remains stored in its previous physical location, even after being invalidated. The recovery application maps these logical locations to the original physical flash memory addresses by using a preserved mapping table in the FTL. This ensures that the correct version of the data is retrieved. FF Recovery employs a number of mechanisms to prevent the loss of these mappings, such as backing up the most recent mapping table updates in a reserved flash memory region and caching updated mappings in RAM. 5. Once the raw data and metadata are successfully recovered, the system integrates them to reconstruct the original files. The recovery application uses the metadata to organize the raw data blocks into their original structure, ensuring that the restored files are consistent with their pre-attack state. This step also verifies the integrity of the restored files by comparing their size and structure against the metadata records. And that's it. That's how the system works. The authors tested it on a variety of real-world ransomware samples across dozens of different families. They found that their approach successfully recovered files in over 90% of cases. The failures were primarily linked to ransomware that overwrote files multiple times, which exceeded the system's ability to track and restore the original mappings. But there were also issues with synchronization gaps and metadata loss in the journaling system. Despite these problems, the system demonstrated decent performance with negligible overhead. The question is, should you use it? If you get hit with ransomware, should you consider using FF recovery? Well, yes and no. No if you have any other options. Remember, selective recovery of specific files should always be Plan B, not Plan A. If you can bear to wait for a full restore, you should absolutely go through with it. But if you find yourself in a position where waiting is simply not an option, then maybe FF recovery is worth a try. If you'd like to go deeper on how they built this system or read more about the rationale behind it, I encourage you to download the paper. Thank you for joining me on today's episode of Journal Club. I hope you enjoyed it. Malcolm Diggs signing off. See you tomorrow.